Doug, the real challenge I see in this scenario is that there's just nothing white or black in here. Everything is gray. Everything is at the margins. That creates a real challenge. But as I listen to the scenario, the one variable I think that really is going to get you in the end is airspeed. And everybody defensively adds airspeed, you know, to their approach and landing to be safe. Well, that's the one thing in this scenario that'll just gobble you up and spit you out.
To me, yes, airspeed is critically important, but the most important thing that I try to stress to all my clients is situational awareness and being aware of when perhaps you can get away or prefer to land with only 10 degrees of flaps and 90 knots, or in this situation, requiring that you're going to have full flaps, understanding that it could contribute to hydroplaning, and have your speed down where it needs to be. The important part is that pilots need to have that situational awareness of what's going on around them. And there are so many elements in this scenario that require that kind of attention to detail. And it's ongoing. It's not like you can listen to the AWOS once and say, oh, we got it made. It's constantly changing. You know, the weather here is like the opposite sex. It's totally undependable and unreliable.
Oh, wait a minute.
I said the opposite sex. And everyone will agree with that.
I'm not going to take a position.
You had to get that.
But, no, I definitely agree that the weather's changing a lot. And this is one where you really got to be on your game. There's not a lot of room for sloppy technique, sloppy airspeed control. You really got to know what you're doing here. And the thing that struck me, my first reaction looking at this, when I was looking at this, was, well, why are we, you know, boxing ourselves in to going home? Is this get-home-itis? Why don't we just look at some of the other options around the area? And you look at some of the other options, it's, you know, you're on the edge of the Catskills and the Berkshires. There's a little valley there that's got some low airports, but there's not a lot of good choices around there. Your diversion airports are now like in a 75-mile range. So there aren't a lot of good options, and any one of those is going to involve flying back through those showers and back through changeable conditions. So that's why you got to be on your game.
Talking about options, though, you know, in a changing environment like this, the weather at Albany that we have is 45 minutes old. We might as well have the weather from Albany from last week.
Yeah.
You know, in this case, I think a missing piece in here before I'd commit to the downwind landing, which I'm open to. I'm kind of torn between that and diverting to Albany. But what I really need is I need the current weather at Albany. So I feel like there's a missing piece in contacting Albany approach to be like, my weather for Albany is 45 minutes old. Can you get me one way or another? Can you get me the current weather at Albany? Because if it's looking better and I see there's another band of showers coming through, it's not that the downwind landing is you know, egregiously unsafe or anything. But if the weather's come up at Albany, you know what? I'm probably just going to divert there because it's not that big of a hit. You know, and it's not that I wouldn't do the same choice, but I want to know. Now, if the weather was still down in Albany, okay, that's a different deal.
Again, this deals with that situational awareness. Now, the pilot is in communication with Albany, and even mentioned if he can get the one-minute weather and ask for it. And yes, that might very well be the best option, but it's also the option to do the approach and on the missed, do the approach to runway 3. And if things aren't working out, there's always that missed approach, and you're already headed to Albany.
Well, I agree with Doug's choice. I don't think this is inherently dangerous, as Jeff said. We've got a relatively slow airplane, a proficient pilot, and a 5,000-foot runway. So I would be, with your choice, do the approach to runway 3. You got better lighting. You've got a bunch of factors going in your favor. However, I want to just bring up another dimension here in these kinds of flights that we always did. It's the concept of a first alternate and a second alternate, and where's the VFR if things really go downhill for us. Sure, Albany was the first alternate. It's not really looking very good, but we should have spec'd out a second alternate. And ultimately, where is it VFR? It might be VFR in Maryland.
But yeah, somewhere out of our fuel range, maybe.
Yes, but we need to know that. We need to know what the full picture of the weather is. And I think that gives some confidence, and combining that second alternate, VFR, whatever elements you want to bring into it, with our fuel situation, it gives us some comfort. It gives us a higher degree of comfort because we may not ultimately really want to go to Albany if we miss on this runway 3 approach at Columbia County. I would not be a big proponent of going to Albany with half-mile viz and rain showers coming through. Is there a better deal somewhere else? What is our second alternate? Maybe that was Bradley. Who knows? Poughkeepsie. But really, the requirement to go to Albany only exists in a lost comm situation. So we can work out something else if we chose to.
Absolutely. And I think that's part of that situational awareness, actually. There wasn't really room to include this in the description of the scenario. But as pilots, we always have to be evaluating alternates. What is the plan B, the plan C? And quite often, you know, we have filed an airport as an alternate because it was required by the regulations. But when we go missed approach, what's the first thing the controller is going to say to you? He's going to say your intentions. And it might very well be to go somewhere that you hadn't planned on going until the flight occurred and you realize, I have to go back the other way.
So one thing that is an essential tool in instrument flying that is rarely trained specifically as part of instrument training is the downwind landing. I mean, the very fact that you may need to fly straight in minimums because you can't make circling minimums, or the situation is one you wouldn't want to circle, you're going to have to accept landing with a tailwind. You go into a much bigger, busier airport, you're going to have to accept landing with a tailwind. And so to try and do that on the fly, as it were, how much tailwind can I take? How much runway do I need? What happens to my procedures so I can prepare for that? You're talking about wanting to slow to, you know, a minimum landing speed, full flaps, but often for a vertical guidance LPV approach like this, how do we teach it? We teach cruising down at, say, 90 knots in a light trainer with partial flaps to DA. We often don't teach slowing down on the glide path. Now you've got 200 vertical feet to make the transition. You're not aimed for brick one of the runway. You're aimed for the landing zone, you know, the touchdown zone, 1,000 feet down runway. So now it's a 4,000 foot runway, right? So if you want to be able to employ these skills in the real world, you need to be trained for it. And then a missed approach that commences halfway down the runway. We're not going to miss most likely at DA. We're going to miss because we're floating and floating and floating. We're going to miss about 500 feet before the end of the runway. That's where our missed approach is going to start.
You make some good points, Jeff. I think a downwind landing on a dark, gusty night is a high-risk maneuver. It's something that Doug Stewart can do because he's very familiar with that airplane. But I think that the average pilot would do what Jeff says, come down the approach much faster than the 62 or 64 knots, wind up floating a long ways and handling that wind. For me, I'm out of town on this thing. I'm going to go right to Albany. Yeah, the weather's pretty bad up there, but it's probably going to be better if that shower goes through. They have nice approaches into the wind. And I think I'm not going to – you make a good point. The pilot is tired. He's fatigued. I'm going to go up there, make one approach, land, and go to the hotel.
I think that's very reasonable. But what I wanted to go back and just touch on something that Jeff had mentioned about training. Actually, what do we do in training? It's 90 knots down the glide slope. You get to DA, and you go around. How many people actually land out of a practice approach? Because what are we always trying to do? We're trying to get another one in that hour of training. And even transitioning in a normal day, you know, you flip the hood off at minimums, you still got to slow from 90 down to, you know, lose 30 knots or so and land without going below the glide slope, which can be a challenge a lot of times. You know,
but in this case, you might want to. I mean, in this case, right, you might want to be transitioning, slowing, and trying to put it down so you've got enough runway to land.
My point is that the mindset on a lot of training is not completing the landing out of that. It's you know, flip the hood down and do the missed approach. So it goes back to your point about practicing these kinds of things when you can, so you have that skill set.
Just one point. It doesn't take a lot longer on a practice approach to actually do a touch and go versus the miss at decision altitude.
Right.
So for training purposes, it makes a lot of sense to ask for the option, let the instrument student fly down to the runway and actually try to touch down. And
leave it to make it a part of the training with the instructor. The student learns that they, from DA on, at some point, we may have to go missed approach. And it's like, as we're approaching, I have, you know, no idea what you're going to say this time because it's not what you're going to say last time, which primes someone more for the real world. I'm ready, but you haven't said yet. I'm ready. Okay, now go. You know, because we're landing too long or whatever.
Because you only really, from DA to the touchdown point on the runway, it's only a little bit over half a mile. So that is a unique discipline in terms of slowing that airplane down and getting it down on the runway. And ask for the option, do the touch and go, then go to your next approach. Maybe will cost you half a minute.
You know, it's interesting how in my own mind, my decision on this one has evolved. You know, as Doug explained, it all sounded very logical, but everything has to really work almost to perfection to achieve not only a safe approach, but a safe landing and a stop within the available runway. And so you're really asking a lot of this pilot at the end of the day as it's getting dark. And for many pilots, that might be too much. Now, I understand in this scenario, we had a current and proficient pilots. How many pilots out there are current and proficient at the point in time when they need to be? Okay, so that's one, which kind of leads you to the Wally Moran option of, I'm going to go to the airport that gives me a lot more options, different runways. I don't have to land with a tailwind. It's an air carrier airport. It's just much better suited to the situation. And really, in spite of the fact that this pilot, you know, may get it done if everything works, that's where it can become dangerous, you know, right at the last, you know, converting when you break out. And how many of us have shot approaches to minimums on a regular basis? And I come back to this over and over again. It's not something we practice, so you may or may not be good at it. And really, the essence of this scenario is breaking out and landing safely under the current conditions.
Well, that Albany, the approach at Albany could be to minimums, or perhaps minimums don't exist at Albany. That's where my second alternate concept comes in. Just let go of the Albany question. Go to someplace where it's clearly better. You're going to spend the night anyway in a hotel.
I mean, at Albany, you could. And again, predicated upon proficiency and skill, because of the Mausers, you could come down to 100 and a quarter. Do you have the skill to do that? Do you have, even if you had the skill and the proficiency, you're tired at this point. But I'd like to get back to the other thing that you're talking about landing that we really didn't consider in here, and I was talking about hydroplaning. You know, what kind of tires do you have? Do you have baloney skins? You know, do you have any tread on your tires? What are the chances of hydroplaning? And, you know, I learned that lesson a long, long time ago where I thought I was the ace of the base and I didn't approach down to minimums and landed on a very wet runway in pouring rain with a strong crosswind and hadn't considered the possibility of hydroplaning. And save for the grace, I would have taken out a bunch of runway lights. So that's another element. And the other one is dealing with wind shear as we fly vertical guidance. And a lot of pilots are not aware of that. And again, it's that situational awareness. If you have the equipment that can give you, if you have glass and have equipment that can give you wind vector and speed, and you hear what's being reported by the AWOS on the ground, and you can now anticipate that shear ahead of time, it's all about situational awareness. And the more awareness we can have of everything that's going on, it better prepares us for the decisions and things that we have to do.
Yeah, and then you look, Albany probably has grooved pavement too, you know, which Columbia County isn't. So,
and we just can never forget, you know, the human factors. How many accidents occur on return to home station at night when you're tired? I mean, it's just a reality that is unavoidable. And you just have to ask yourself whether you're putting, you know, inadvertent pressure on yourself because it is home station and I am familiar, and you just make a decision that you wouldn't make if you were going into a different location under different circumstances.